If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Captain! Captain!
Report.
Signatures detected!
Shields up!
Signatures detected!
Red alert!
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair! Chair!
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons?
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica. Thanks for coming back for another show after last week.
Yeah, that I didn't see anybody dragging us for that. I thought that mostly went over pretty good.
One of the great runners in the history of our show, I think.
we were both like, wow, this may truly drive our audience away once and for all.
You know what? That really gets back to like the core goal of our show from the very first episode. It's always been do what makes each other laugh.
Yeah.
That's what did it that time.
This may be like overly sincere by half, but as far as creative risks go, like I kind of feel like Discovery is taking big swings like that this season as well. Huh. Maybe we're inspired by the show we're watching.
Wow. Sure. more something by half.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying every swing is a hit, but
you know what? You're not wrong. This show, and by show I mean Star Trek Discovery, is taking some swings. All right, those swings are with a giant sword.
Yeah, true indeed. I'm feeling a little like slurry this morning. I hope people don't think I'm drunk.
Really? What's your problem? Do you have some morning nog?
I haven't yet. I actually do have a plan to make some nog later today, but we're doing an early morning Greatest Disco. You're headed off to take your doggy somewhere fun, mm-hmm. I hear. And so we're cracking into this early, but I'm like, the people are going to think that this is a late night and I've already been hitting the sauce.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to sound even worse to the people who adjust the speed of the show using their podcatcher.
Yeah.
But here's a message to all of those people who do that. We're always sounding terrible to you.
Right. Yeah. We don't need to ruin the show. You did that for us.
Right. Yeah, I think you sound normal to me, Ben.
Oh, shit.
You sound just like you always do.
You saying I sound this bad always?
You sound like you right now.
Wow.
And I mean that as neutrally as possible.
Feels great getting that kind of support from your podcast partner.
Damned with neutral praise. That's what I'll do. You're in a freezing cold studio. Ben, I would expect to hear teeth chattering instead of slurring, but I guess that's what happens. Like if you get thrown into icy water, and your body starts to shut down, you will start slurring. That's one of the symptoms of hypothermia, right?
Yeah. They call it chill drunk.
All the kids are trying it.
But you know what I know from Voyage of the Mimi is you take off all your clothes and you get in a sleeping bag with somebody that doesn't have hypothermia, and you'll be right as rain. But
perversely, they will get drunk.
You know,
that's the price they pay.
In my own personal voyage of the meme, the top box is Drake saying no way to real alcohol, and then on the bottom box he's like giving finger guns to jumping into a lake of icy water.
Oh man, if that's not on Twitter when I wake up on the Tuesday morning that this episode releases, I will be furious at our audience.
I know.
And I want all variations, right? I want the Drake one, I want the Jordy one. There's a couple of others, right?
Gotta have motorcycle dad and son. My personal favorite meme. Take us through the entire voyage of the memes. That's what I say.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be great. Car swerving to get to.
Oh, yeah. Two buttons that look exactly the same and a sweaty guy trying to choose which one.
Yeah. One is getting drunk. The other is saving someone from hypothermia.
Brain with some electrical activity, getting drunk, brain with a little more lightning, jumping into icy cold water, like galaxy brain taking a drink to the dome while jumping into an ice covered lake.
Cosmos brain drinking eggnog while jumping into an icy lake of eggnog.
Yeah.
There you go.
What you doing out here with all this
eggnog
on a Thursday afternoon?
I'm to the point now in my eggnog growler where I'm starting to count the glasses that are left. I got to time this thing out so I don't run out before the new year. New year is obviously the cutoff for eggnog. I will not drink eggnog after New Year's Eve.
No, there's 1 month of the year where you can nog it up and then you have to stop.
Yeah, I don't want to dump it down the drain and I don't want to run out before.
You sound like a sailor during the Napoleonic Wars on the high seas in the middle of the Pacific getting your eggnog ration for the day.
I know. It's so delicious. One of the only good things about this year was my discovery of making my own eggnog. And I use that word the way Christopher Columbus does. Discovering something that was already there.
Discovering something that millions of people had discovered before and killing millions in the process.
Yeah, that was also my process for this year's eggnog batch.
Yeah, this is Mirror Universe, Adam.
Right.
Well, Adam, do you want to get into the Mirror Universe today?
There's no choice in the matter, Ben, as season 3 of Star Trek Discovery has diverted to an airport run by the Mirror Universe. We're going to be sleeping in the terminal for a second straight episode as we discuss season 3, episode 10 of Star Trek Discovery. It's Terra Firma Part 2.
We are picking up right where we left off, I think. This is the continuation of Mug throwing Burnham in the brig. Mm-hmm. She told them to take her to the Agonizer at the end of the last episode, but for some reason they throw her into just a cell at first so that they can kind of dialogue each other to death.
I thought for a moment that was going to be Agonizer XL.
Right. I did too. I was like, oh man, like does it hurt even more when you're in a really big room? You can like throw yourself around and like supplementally injure yourself by being agonized. It's 11 out of 10 on the dialogue scale, right? Like the energy is just as big as when we left off. It's insane.
Couple of things about this sequence that I really like are, and this is something that we talk about on the Hit War Movie Podcast, Friendly Fire, an actor's willingness to suspend their vanity for the sake of showing pain.
Yeah.
Sonequa Martin-Green goes without makeup for a number of scenes. She is seen as being like transformed into someone being tortured by the agonizers over a period of time. And along with her performance, really makes this transformation scary. I think it's again, like I think she is one of the bright spots of this show, and especially now, her willingness to do that I thought was great.
I totally agree, Adam.
Did it seem to you like they changed lenses a little bit, like punching in closer? They were not using flattering lenses, and they were going in close on her face as she was accumulating the damage from this in a way that helped tell the story too.
Yeah, I mean, it's awful. Yeah. I imagine this probably comes from like studio suits as much as anything, but I don't think that we see women subjected to this kind of like makeup transformation very often in television, because I think that like the way our dog shit capitalist patriarchy works is that we never want to see women like anything but attractive when we are being presented with them on screen.
Uh-huh.
And so this feels like really intense and unique.
It's also another rep with the agonizer and the legend of the agonizer in such a way that I think incorporates some contemporary torture techniques. Like, I don't think we've experienced an agonizer that wakes you up after a period of time to re-torture you.
Yeah.
In a way that we've heard stories about modern torture techniques, you know, like it's not just a booth that makes you feel pain. There's some psychological stuff happening there too.
Right. The ISS disco is a black site CIA operation.
Yeah. The dialogue between Mira Michael Burnham and Mug here is interesting, because she accuses Mug of retiring to the Charon. Like,
yeah, the Charon is like a pleasure barge.
And if you weren't super plugged into Mug's plan, I could see that being absolutely what most people view it as.
Right. It's super intense. And they start to like debate like finer points of fascist politics, like,
if we don't give our subjects something to live for, they will always be in rebellion.
The number of revolts that we had to quash was up 50% year over year. and that starts to get expensive. So we have to,
that's what's known as the revolt hockey stick.
Yeah, like she like cites Genghis Khan as a person who ran an empire that she admires and wants to model the Terran Empire off of.
Uh-huh.
And meanwhile, Michael Burnham is flipping shit back in her face, saying like, every single person that we haven't conquered is forming this coalition to fight you. So you need to focus on that and not like this kind of policy shift that is aimed at making a slightly softer and more friendly fascist empire.
Right.
They do not come to an agreement in this moment, and Giorgio winds up retiring to her quarters, where she does have the agonizer Twitch stream on in the background a lot, but
yeah.
She's not like, so she's not taking her mind off of the agony, but she is also running her business.
For agony on the go, you wanna take the pad with you.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like to drive around watching agony though. Like, it's just too distracting.
Yeah.
I'll download the agony and watch it later.
Agony works surprisingly well in podcast form, as The Greatest Discovery often proves.
We get a great, big, awesome Sonequa Martin Green scream at the conclusion of this scene, which is just amazing. It's never not amazing to hear her go 10 out of 10 vocally.
I will kill all of you!
It's awesome.
I just wanted to call attention to it, because we always do.
Yeah, thank you. Killy gets the job of kind of like flipping Michael Burnham. This is like such funny delegation by Giorgio, because she's like, hey, like, you're one of the great torturers in the fleet. And Killy likes this job. She does it with some zeal. But Giorgio doesn't just leave it to her. Like, there's a pretty interesting moment where Giorgio comes into the cell. I guess Burnham has been given a brief respite from the agonizer booth and is sleeping in the cell. And Giorgio gives her some fireflies in like a fish jar. I think this is the moment where I realized that Mug has really changed, like on a deep level from what she was when we first met her.
I'm still a fish jar?
Fish bowl. Fuck off.
Let's see. We've got a jar of strawberry, a jar of grape. We got a jar of fish.
I'm quitting the show.
For my toast. There is when I saw this object placed in her cell, I thought there was not a chance that this wouldn't be smashed against someone's face and stabbed through a throat, right? You're giving a dangerous prisoner access to glass.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That softening of the character is only by degrees, right? And I think that the writing challenge of this two episode arc is how reformed do you make Giorgio? Because I don't believe that you could like entirely reform Giorgio. I think that if they went any further than this, it would feel like it would feel incredibly saccharine and wishful thinking. Like, I don't think that she has entirely given up on the evil person that she was, just that her perspective on the utility of evil has changed.
Were you not a little bit confused by the ambiguity of what we could just call the mission that she's on in the mirror universe? Because, I mean, by the end, we realize that this has all been a test, but during this mission, were you clear on her goals? I thought her goal was just to make sure that Michael survived. Like, that was the top line goal, and everything else was just secondary to that. Like, I didn't think she was going in there to reform the place.
I think her goal was to not get deposed. But like, yeah, I've been wondering since she stabbed Stamets, because we know that Stamets was alive when we visited the mirror universe in season one. So I was like, are we changing the timeline here? Like, what exactly is happening with causality?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how much of a goal she has. Like, maybe you're right. Maybe it's just like, okay, I have a second crack at this, and the thing I regretted most was killing my daughter. So
the question of causality is super important at this point and at all other points in this two episode series, because without any sort of stakes, you remove the tension that you're trying to encourage here.
Right. I mean, I never expected Discovery to change from being kind of a sci-fi space opera type of series to more of a musical. But Giorgio breaks into song here. She sings, "All I ever wanted, all I ever needed was for us to rule our empire. Betrayal is very unnecessary. I recently learned that."
Wow. So moody.
Beautiful song.
There's no chance anyone who's been inside of an agonizer doesn't smell like pee, right? And the agonizer itself has to smell like pee.
Yeah, that's like a phone booth in a bus station, kind of a smell coming out of that agonizer.
I feel like that's got to be in a way that like the smell sense is so tied to like memory, obviously, but also like instinctual human being shit. Like, as soon as you smell that inside the booth, you've got to be terrorized before the thing's even turned on.
Right. Yeah. It's like Pavlov's torture subject.
But also, you know what? Taking that one step further, Ben, I wonder if whenever anyone in the mirror universe goes to take a pee, if that is not a pleasurable experience because it's tied to the memory of agony.
Yeah. I love taking a pee. I would hate to have that ruined for me.
I know.
So the deal is struck. Michael Burnham can come back into the fold, but she's got to kind of tie off all of the loose ends of her aborted coup attempt by killing everybody that had aligned themselves with her and Lorca. There's an amazing moment where she comes in and starts dumping comm badges on the desk while Mug is trying to have a evil McLaughlin group.
If you won.
I thought this was a fun scene of street magic because I have no idea how she fit that many badges into her hand out of frame. Like, because with right. one hand, she's like sprinkling the two, and then the other hand, she just turns her other hand over and like a rainfall, 40 badges hit the table.
Yeah. It looks like she hit 3 sevens on a slot machine with the other hand.
Yeah. Did you feel like Michael Burnham's pivot was earned based on the relative amount of torture she received? I thought a scene was missing, and that scene was Killy going Saeed from Lost on her. Like, we're given the impression that Killy is a great torturer, but all we get mm-hmm. is a couple of questions and that's it. I kind of wanted it to go darker and see some fingernails being ripped out, you know? This is a show that shows trauma. Where's the trauma?
Yeah, I agree that they kind of underused Killy. There was too much setup for the amount of Killy we got. And I kind of feel like Detmer was the one that persuaded Michael Burnham to rejoin the fold
uh-huh.
as much as anyone. I don't know if I like believe the dialogue. You know, I think that Detmer was probably imagining that she was getting Michael back up on her feet so that they could fight another day.
Yeah.
But, you know, Detmer doesn't realize how expendable she is to Michael Burnham.
There's a quality to Mary Wiseman's performance in these scenes that never totally turns off the impression you get that she may be having fun.
Yeah.
And I think hard torture would have been a way to turn that off completely, you know?
Yeah, right. I really want to talk to actors from this show about yeah. how fun doing Mirror Universe is. Because I think that, like, there is, like, from a production standpoint and a performance standpoint, Mirror Universe has got to be a real fun mm-hmm. break from the norm on this show.
Yeah, you really want to get out of those breathable fabrics whenever possible and put on plastic shell.
Adam Kelpian is back off the menu, boys.
Yeah, for health reasons. Yeah, I guess ganglia was making everyone shit.
Right, yeah. There was a lot of heart disease among the upper echelons of Terran society.
Yeah.
A lot of gout. And so they've decided to stop eating so much ganglia.
Also not on the menu is the idea of the coalition, because off screen, Mug has smashed it.
Yeah. That's an indication of how much time has passed
right.
that I think is interesting, because when she comes out of this toward the end of the episode, she's like, wow, like I just experienced 3 months of totally unbelievable experiences.
You're telling me I just inner lighted?
Right. And like, without moments like that, this would feel like it takes place over the course of like 3 or 4 days, right?
Wait a second, Doc. You're telling me that this is a time portal?
You built a time portal out of an architecturally salvaged door? They talk about how they're going to get back at Lorca in this scene. They discuss his radio code being Vicar. Boy, I was shocked that Lorca did not show up in this episode after how many times he gets name dropped in part one and part two.
It's a shame that a code name like Vicar wasn't said through a Boston accent. Where the hell's Lorca? He's going by code name Vicar now.
You know what I look forward to every day when I come here? That the fucking Vicar won't show up.
the best part of my fucking day.
How you like them Vickers?
That's the pivot in the mission is now to get Vicker.
Right. And this dinner kind of feels like the coffee shop scene in Heat. But yeah, they come out of it not with a new commitment to kill each other, but with an aligned goal. And they're kind of post-gaming this, Mug and Mirror Saru, and talking about what this means. And Saru is like, hey, I actually got some bad news. I'm about to die due to Vahari, the term that I keep being shocked that you know. And she kind of reads him into the big Vahari secret.
I've already started growing spikes in some different places on my body.
I have feelings that I've never felt before.
Someone gave me the Joy of Vahari book, and very, very realistic drawings in there. Kind of a turn off, really.
Well, let me get you a copy of Our Spikes Ourselves. And
Everybody's Spikes.
Yeah.
This is a checkpoint in the episode, I think, that's fairly important, because I think it's asking you, the viewer, who you're meant to trust. And I think this is related to that question earlier about the torture of Michael Burnham. Because we don't see Michael Burnham tortured sufficiently, I don't think we feel like we trust that she's made the turn into trustworthiness in this universe. And in this scene, I think we're meant to trust Saru based on the relationship he's developing with Mirror Universe Georgiou. And like, the episode is obscuring this in a way that I think it believes is useful to set up the surprise that happens later. But at this point in the episode, do you trust Michael Burnham more than you trust Saru, or Saru more than Michael Burnham?
I had really complicated feelings about this scene, because Saru is being told that everyone he's ever known that has been killed was killed needlessly. Mm-hmm. And he's also a slave, and specifically a slave to Mug, and is being told that she is pouring insult on this injury, and he's outraged briefly, and she's like, no, like, live a better life, like live well, that's the best revenge. And he's like, what are you talking about? Like, this is shattering my already completely fucked up world. And I like him wanting like vengeance specifically against her would have been completely justified by this scene, but it's not the way the scene goes. And so I don't quite think that they, like, I didn't quite buy that.
Mug is like, look, I know a guy like you. He's the captain of a starship, a terrible captain. That could be you. Just imagine you being an unqualified captain of a starship that no one trusts.
One day.
Yeah, aim high, Saru. And Mirror Universe Saru is like, recognizes this weird behavior from her and is like, save yourself. You're going to get yourself killed talking like that.
Yeah.
I guess that's the moment where we're meant to trust Mirror Universe Saru, for him to go out on that limb.
If he's gone through Vahari at some point in this episode, where is the scene of him spiking everyone, you know?
Yeah. Nine Inch Nails closer video, scene missing is the... is what we get.
So they're trying to find Lorca. He has kind of gone to ground. Nobody can determine his location, but they pick up somebody trying to radio him around Risa. This is a character named Duggins, who uses the alias Carnelian. Guess he's like a big Pokemon fan.
I was positive this was Kevin Pollak when he showed up on the screen. And then I squinted.
Oh, funny.
And I was like, wait, is this Carl? Like the Paul Guilfoyle character?
I thought it was Jeffrey Combs when he first showed up on screen.
This is not the fault of the actor. This is just a fault of a creative that guy mind that my brain has become, like always trying to place the that guy in any scene.
Well, and it's also a weird angle and there's like some static on the screen. So
yeah,
like I got bumped in the same way, but to a different that guy.
I had to back it up a couple of times because I wasn't listening to dialogue. I was like, is that who I think it is? Neither.
What do you think the Horgon looks like on Mirror Universe Risa?
There's a chance that it's like the really boring sex capital of the universe, you know?
Yeah, vanilla Risa.
Yeah.
It's like the one part of the Mirror Universe that's not kinky.
Yeah, Risa is the place in the Prime Universe where you go to let go of your inhibitions to vacation.
Right.
But maybe a vacation from the Mirror Universe is more puritanical, like maybe.
Oh, it's a Handmaid's Tale environment down
yeah.
Mirror Universe Risa.
Yeah, maybe that's what you get off on, like fucking through the sheet.
Vessel's powering up.
Yeah, so this guy gives some lip to them and explains that they're never gonna catch Lorca, and Michael Burnham shoots him and then reveals that she has been plotting a whole new coup this entire time. And we get another scene where she confronts Mug about the disastrous direction she's taking her empire.
Right, because they beam aboard not Paul Guilfoyle or Kevin Pollak into the brig. And that's where the whole thing breaks down, right?
Yeah.
It's coup on coup in the brig area, and no one expects the Kelpian army as backup.
Mug's sense of dramatic timing is really amazing, I feel like. she always gets like that last word in before everybody kicks in the door waving the 4-4, and like this goes by so fast, like I almost don't care about where Mirror Universe Saru got rifles and trained in their use.
Right,
like he's throwing Culber around the room, he's shooting people. Sonequa Martin-Green and Michelle Yeoh are getting in a great big Star Trek fight that ends with a sword through Burnham's belly and a knife in Giorgio's neck.
Yeah.
And as Giorgio shuffles loose this mortal coil, she's being cradled in the arms of Saru, who agrees to live a better life, I guess.
What we don't see are the moments after going back to the snow where Saru and all the rest of the Kelpians are just gunned down and then vented into space.
Yeah, they're gunned down. They get their spike ganglia ripped out and they're like, ooh, crunchy. I like this new kind of ganglia.
Yeah, very, very satisfying, like a Cheeto.
Giorgio wakes up on the ice, cradled now in Michael Burnham's arms. She just walked through the door from Michael Burnham's perspective and collapsed on the other side. And yeah, has interlighted.
She takes out a recorder from elementary school, starts playing Three Blind Mice. It's very hard to play in the very cold conditions out there.
Mm.
You can't make a good embouchure in that kind of weather. You're freezing.
It was all a test, Adam.
Yeah.
Carl is the guardian of forever that we encountered in an animated series episode during the off season on this show.
Yeah, now we've been given homework to do in our next off season by watching that original series episode.
Yeah. Basically, he had to see like what kind of a person she had become to determine what timeline to send her to. Because I got the sense that he could send her to like contemporary Mirror Universe or past Mirror Universe or past Prime Universe or past Kelvin Universe. Like, like he could send her anywhere. And the test was to determine like what environment she would fit in best in and cause the least problems in.
Right, because destination is part of his task, but also his portal was used for evil for a long time during the temporal wars. So he had to make sure that she wouldn't abuse the power of time travel first and foremost. And then once she made it clear that she was going to be a good, he would grant her access to the portal to her new television series. Carl's like, you know, I just watched the pilot. That's what these last two episodes were. And I think we're going to take it to series. I think that was the test.
Yeah. She followed the campsite rule, Adam. She left the mirror universe better than she found it.
Yeah, it's true. Ben, with 15 minutes left, can I interest you in a story about Star Trek Discovery Season 3 already in progress?
Yeah, please do.
Back on the disco, Adira is working on the Kelpian ship in a nebula problem when Book rolls up and connects his home pod to the computer that they've been working on. It's like, sounds pretty good, ain't it? Sounds real good. I love it.
Really, really surprising bass given the size of this thing.
Really fills the room.
That's that computational audio. They don't put that in that echo, do they? In it, governor.
Just a good 6 minutes of product placement here.
Yeah. I liked a lot about this scene. Like, Adira is complaining that they can't crack into the computer in the Kelpian ship that's in a nebula on the other side of the galaxy, and speculating maybe it's just a really old computer and it's fucked up and broken. Jet Reno comes in to complain that the computations they've been doing have drained all of her power. And Stamets is like, who are you? You haven't been on this series for 6 episodes now. What's going on?
What Jet Reno is really doing is flaunting her contract terms.
Right. What about that scene where we were all like looking out the window together? Where were you in that? I mean, I feel like we've gotten the whole crew together a bunch of times and you just haven't been there.
Mirror Universe Jet Reno's jokes are really hurtful.
So Book he's been able to read the manual, read the tech manual, and spot some gaps in their knowledge about the current timeline, and helps them connect to the Kelpian ship. It's going to get them, I guess, get them a little bit more information about what they're flying into in the last episode of the season.
Ben, you've been told some family members have unfortunately been in a terrible accident, and you've been told well after the fact their car is flipped over in a ditch. It's filled with water. Wouldn't you like to go out there as soon as possible? Like, you don't need to know the temperature of the water. You don't need to know anything about the car, really. All you need to do is head out there, because it's an emergency.
But it's not. That's the thing they keep coming back to is that this happened 120 years ago. Like, I agree that I want to know the answer to the mystery urgently, but like I don't think that anybody thinks there's anyone there to rescue.
Yes, but the way the show works is that you can't rule out that possibility.
Right.
In the way that, and here's why. When we met up with the non-people on the seed ship, like, that was life after death. That was life after impossible circumstances. This is a show that makes the case for that over and over again.
Yeah.
And why are we just supposed to not have hope in this case?
Entirely unclear. We sort of wrap the show on a couple of moments of acknowledging the new mug-free series that we are moving into. Saru has a moment with the Admiral, who is hologramming in from Starfleet HQ. And the Admiral kind of puts the wood on Saru about letting smuggler guy plug shit into his computer. He's like, you realize you've got sphere data and a spore drive and you're letting a guy plug some emerald chain tech into things.
We would prefer if Discovery remained air gapped.
Yeah. And like there's voice given to the idea that Michael Burnham is perhaps destined for that captain's chair in this episode also. So I thought this scolding was an interesting thing to have in that self same episode.
It felt like a weird tone from Admiral, somehow more by the book than Captain Esteban in Star Trek III. It felt to me like, I don't know, it felt like the scene was a setup to establishing him as maybe a bad character or a bad operator in this thing. And I can't be more specific than that. Something about his tone and the way he put it here. It seemed less about protecting the ship by not allowing chain tech integration, and more about, well, if you know about this chain tech, I really don't want you to know about the rest of the chain tech that you don't know about at this point that we're currently using, because we secretly have a back channel deal with the chain for some nefarious reason that will be revealed in the season finale. You know, like, that was the math that was happening to me in this moment, but that may just be projection.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say in a season like this how much planting is going on. We're very close to the end now, and I still don't know how much has been planted that is yet to be paid off.
Yeah. So the idea with Mug is that Carl has tested her, and because she made different choices in her adventure in the mirror universe, and those choices were inherently good, he's going to send her back to a time where the mirror universe and the prime universe were in closer proximity for her health. This is seen as a health benefit because Mug is still spazzing out in the snow after returning from her field trip, and she's fairly pissed off about this. She's like, I thought that the going through the door was going to be a cure, and it's not.
Right. It was entirely to determine where she would have to wind up. So there is, you know, that moment where she says to Michael Burnham, like, maybe you should be captain. Think about it. Anyways, off I go.
Saru's terrible. I think you should be more observant of these things.
Yeah. I would be scared as hell to walk through a fucking time butthole. Like, as many times as she has gone through them, like, this thing is terrifying. It looks like a saw blade, you know? It looks like a burr grinder for coffee.
They do a good job of stretching the taffy of this moment. Like, there is a pregnancy to the pause before going through that I found pretty effective. I love that you also get a moment after Mug goes through the portal where Michael Burnham looks at Carl and is like, getting more of those time portal tickets for me and my crew, who, in case you've forgotten, also want to go back to their home time at some point.
We'd even be happy to leave the ship here if that seems like the right thing to do. Yeah. Anyways, all of our families are back there.
Saru's like, what does Carl need with a starship? His one good moment as captain.
They have a memorial service for Mug in the mess hall on Disco. Pretty astonishing moment. I just don't buy that there's this much warm feeling for Mug. I think she was too evil. I don't think that they earned this.
I completely agree with you. This felt to me more like actors eulogizing Michelle Yeoh and like toasting her going off to make her own series than it is about these characters making decisions and saying things that are true to their characters. This felt like wagging the show a little bit.
Yeah.
This is space cannibal Hitler they're toasting, like, wistfully.
Yeah, right. And they're a bunch of leftists going like, wow, didn't agree with space cannibal Hitler's politics, but one of the goats, you know, like, what? I understand the moment of, like, Tilly and Saru saying, like, surprisingly got a lot out of my relationship with Mug because that oppositional energy really helped me strengthen my own position. But that's not something that you like admire in the other person. It's like, you may appreciate an experience with a bully, but you don't appreciate the bully in and of themselves.
One of these days, I think we as a society are going to learn that when a good person attempts to find common ground with a bad person, it means the good person has lost.
Yeah.
And this, over and over again, this show seems to be making that case that kindness wins. And this is one of those scenes that seems to be emphasizing that. And it may have worked to make Mirror Universe Georgiou a slightly less lethal person in her continuing adventures to a series of her own, but to not regard who she really was at any point is disingenuous.
Yep. I wonder about this, you know, like there is the love thine enemy adage, and Starfleet seems to be about living up to that. But when thine enemy is using that love against you, mm-hmm. it feels foolish. It right. feels like that bad faith that Mug always acted in should count against her in some way.
Interesting punctuation at the end of this two-parter here. They shoot a torpedo casing, an empty one, filled with swords and knives and shit out into the closest sun.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll return to this place one day. see what blooms out of Space Hitler's torpedo casing.
Saru sits down in the captain's chair and Detmer says, "Where to, Captain?" And he says, "First star to the right and straight on till morning." And she's like, "Don't you think we should get back to like that nebula where the ship full of Kelpians is that probably was where the burn started? Like, I feel like that should be where we go." And he's like, "Oh, right. Yes, yes, yes.
Straight on till morning. That's what we were doing during the eulogy."
Did you like this episode, Adam?
I wish it didn't feel so transparently like a pilot episode for another series.
Mm-hmm.
I understand you've got to cleave this character out to make that possible. I think the two-parter ably did that in sending her on her way. But with three episodes left in this third season, I'm still missing the future deeply. And I feel like by the time we ever get to experience it, it's going to be over. And then we will have gone back to the past or whatever. Ben, I had an epiphany as I was watching this episode. The episode's good. The episode succeeds in what it was trying to do. But it's not a season 3 Star Trek Discovery episode. It's a pilot.
This is a series that keeps writing itself puzzles that it then has to unfuck, you know?
How do you do a puzzle?
Like, oh, we have a pre-original series ship that travels faster than Warp 10. What are we going to do about the fact that that was never mentioned in the original series?
Yeah.
Spock has a sister. What are we going to do about that fact? And writing two entire seasons of television around the idea of like unbreaking the timeline given the setup is something that they did to great effect, I think. But
yeah,
writing Space Hitler into the crew, I think, is another example of that. And they had to do a 2-episode arc to get her back out of the crew. I just wish they hadn't written her in the first place. These last 2 episodes have felt more like cleaning up a mess that season 1 made than writing for a new season of television.
If all it took to change a bad person was proximity to good people, we would have far fewer bad people in the world. And I feel like this show is trying to make the case that just by Mirror Universe Georgiou being on the Discovery, that's sufficient to change her. And I wish I bought it. I just don't buy it.
Well, speaking of good people, Adam, do you want to check our Priority One inbox and see if any good people have left messages there?
Oh, yeah.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Look at this message. Ben, we've got one right here.
Yeah, we've got a personal message, and it's from the crew of the OCC, and it's to Ian. Goes like this. Ian, thank you for introducing us to the Uxbridge Shimoda Extended Universe. Many hours of fun and happy memories have been made as a result. Looking forward to going to another live show together post-plague. You are an awesome guy, and we're so happy to have you in the Bwangs. Arthur is willing to be your chadich anytime. Love, Francie and Joel.
Wow, Ian, not cutting his own Bwangs. instead accepted in the Bwangs. Good job by them.
Good job indeed. Well, if you would like to send a Priority One message on the show, please do. It helps us keep the lights on around here, and it's a fun way to celebrate a loved one or promote a thing if you have something to promote. It's MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
In looking at our schedule, it looks like we have some openings coming up. So if you want to write in the drying cement of the last couple episodes of The Greatest Discovery, make sure you get them in time. 3 eps left.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself an Edward Larkin?
I think that the character that I had the most fun watching and that seemed to be having the most fun was Captain Killy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm going to make her my Edward Larkin for this episode. And I think partly that's because I just like felt like she was underused. Like they set her up for more than she got to do in this one.
Yeah, that's a good call.
How about you?
I think I am going to nominate Mirror Universe Saru. I really like how Doug Jones played this character. I am sad that we didn't get that scene that we often get in a war movie where, you know, a gun falls to Saru's feet and he reaches for it and he is thrilled by the possibility of finally, like,
yeah,
getting that kind of violent agency that a character like his is granted in a moment like that. Instead, like, mm-hmm. He just bursts through the room. I feel like there is a moment where he and his people turn that corner and they are thrilled about it. And yeah. Including all of the vengeance feelings that he's got to feel in that moment. That's got to be thrilling, too. Thrilling and fun in an Edward Larkin kind of way. So Mirror Universe Saru. The better Saru, in my mind, is going to be my wow. Edward Larkin. Yeah, make okay. him the captain of the disco.
Look at me. I am the captain now.
Well, Ben, we have, as I said before, 3 more episodes remain in this 3rd season of Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, did you watch a promo at all?
I did. I was thanked profusely for checking out the Ready Room. Mm-hmm. And then I fast-forwarded to the final 3 minutes where I got the glimpse of the next episode. And it looks like a butt-cut continuation right into the next episode, much like we got in this episode. We're in the eulogy scene, basically, in the commissary still. And we get the return of Gray.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that will be great news for Adira, who was clearly in denial about how much they missed Gray.
So, yeah.
I'm curious to see whether or not they start to make moves toward the Viruba Nebula anytime soon.
I know. Even if you're desperate, a Viruban sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
You know?
I would eat a Viruban if I was stuffed, you know?
Yeah. It's the sauerkraut that I like.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
It's good shit. Well, Adam, we're going to leave it with Rob's from here, but check back with us next week for The Greatest Discovery. And hey, we're right before the Christmas holiday. If you celebrate Christmas and are looking for last-minute gift ideas, how about a gift membership to MaximumFun.org for your favorite Greatest Discovery viewer?
There's so much extra content in that feed. You're giving them a gift that can't fit in a box.
Yeah, indeed.
That's because it's too big.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Adam Pranica and Ben Harrison. The show is produced by me, Rob Schulte. Our theme music is by the great Adam Ragusea, who has an amazing cooking channel on YouTube. Go check it out. Maybe you can make a holiday treat. Hey, if you're looking for more Trek, why don't you discover our back catalog? There are plenty of fun episodes that are great to listen to time and time again. Hey, don't forget you can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram under the handles Greatest Trek. Those accounts run by the great Bill Tilly, who also holds the keys to the P.O. Box. So if you have some plates or random Trek accoutrement, he might be able to guide you in the right direction. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on The Greatest Discovery.
Double cheeked up.
Eggnog.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.